Welcome to At The Letters for May 9th, 2024. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you alongside Arden Swelling on this week's podcast produced by Christian Ryan and Nick Ongrod. The Blue Jays right now are 17-20. They just went on a road trip where they went 2-3. Kind of feels worse, like a lot of things about this team. Felt like they were losing a lot of games. They lost three, they won two. Arden, you were there for every single game of that trip. Before we get to the Blue Jays, what is your vibe right now as we record this on the Thursday before the Twins arrive to Toronto?
Well, the last game of a road trip always has a very big say in what the vibe is coming out of it, as you well know. And I think that Wednesday's game, which John Schneider described as a gut check game, a look yourself in the mirror and show up game, I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. I think that has a lot to do with just the feeling around the team. I'm sure the feeling for fans, obviously the feeling for us because we're so immersed in it, because if they come out of that road trip getting swept in Philly and they're 1-4 coming off the road, coming home, I think that's a lot different than them coming home 2-3 on the road trip, which obviously still isn't good, but having bounced back well from a pretty embarrassing loss and a pretty poor effort on Tuesday to come back and play a lot better on Wednesday in the second game of the Philly series.
Line drive, left center field. Kevin Kiermaier's got it.
It appears as though Kevin is okay. What a great jump he got on this very hard hit ball.
Yeah, definitely an improved showing for the Jays. Chris Bassett was great. They got enough offense, enough relief pitching to be able to win that one. It's funny, like when I look at this team right now, 17-20, they're last place in the American League East. They're 4.5 games out of a playoff spot. Like, there are reasons for pessimism, like real reasons for pessimism. They're not in a good place. The season is not going well. Like, let's say that. This is not off to a good start. And then you look up and it's like they have 125 games to go. So, you know, we'll get to, you know, what they could do and should do. And, you know, some of the problems with this team. Again, there are real problems with this baseball team right now. But I guess big picture before we dive into that, 17-20. Back at home to face the Twins for three. What's your read on this team and where they sit right now?
Yeah, it's interesting. There is so much time left, but it's, I think we can kind of hold two ideas at once. Number one being that there's still 4.5 months of baseball to be played and there's still 125 games of baseball to be played. So, so much can still happen and this season can turn in many directions still. And we can only really assess the data that we have to this point through 37 games, and the data that we get over the next 125 is liable to completely change our opinions on things. So you want to be understanding of that. But the other side of it is, like, the Blue Jays are three games under 500 in a very competitive division in a very competitive league. They've put themselves in a hole from which they're going to need to climb their way out of. If they want to win 89 games again, which is what they won last year to reach the third wild card spot, they're going to have to go 72-53 the rest of the way. That's a 576 winning percentage. Last season, only four teams played to a 575 winning percentage over the entire season: Atlanta, Baltimore, Dodgers, Rays. So the Blue Jays are going to have to play at a pace of one of the four best teams last season over the rest of this year just to match last year's win total. So I think that that is also a very real thing that you have to understand at this still relatively early point in the season.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they have cost themselves time, for one, and games in the standings, right? The Orioles are playing well. The Yankees are playing well. So, you know, unfortunately for the Blue Jays, the division kind of looks out of reach. And the wild card, okay, hey, you can still be a wild card team, do some damage, and have a really successful season, but you got to get there first. And as you just outlined, that's going to require a huge step forward. And so, as I look at this team, you know, because you hear, of course, like, we hear fire Shapiro, fire Atkins, fire Schneider. We hear that stuff and sell, you know, rebuild. As I look at this team, I have never at any point in 2024 been as far toward the sell end of the spectrum as I am right now, for obvious reasons. They've played very poorly. But at the same time, that doesn't put me in the sell camp right now. It's more just like, hey, there are a lot of ways this thing can go in the next, let's say, month, couple months. And they do have the luxury of time right now. So maybe they end up playing really well and they're buyers. Great. That's what everyone wanted going into the year. Maybe they kind of tread water and they're below 500 and they have to explore selling. Or maybe they play even worse and it's clear they're going to be sellers. So selling to me is very much on the table as a possibility that could happen for the Blue Jays in 2024. And again, that is not a good place to be. That is not where this franchise wants to be. But it's, in my opinion at least, you're not putting that for sale sign up today any more than the Giants are or any more than the Tigers are. And those are two of the teams that have similar playoff odds to the Jays.
Well, just within an MLB front office, nobody's thinking about selling right now. Nobody's even really thinking about buying right now if you're a really good team, because you don't know what's going to be available when the time comes to buy. Credit to AJ Preller and the Padres, right, for being aggressive and getting a deal done for Luis Urias, but that was such a unicorn trade. We just don't see deals like that this early in seasons. And there's a reason for that. Like, there's a reason that 99% of trade activity happens within like a week of the deadline. This is the structure of baseball. There's an extra playoff spot, that has really influenced the market. That's let a lot of teams remain competitive closer to the deadline. That has pushed off a lot of this decision making. So, like, I get it. The Blue Jays are under 500. That needs to change. They need to stop the bleeding. They need to turn this thing around, and they need to get above 500. The Blue Jays at no point in 2023 were ever below 500. And here we are in early May, and they are below 500. Clearly, if this continues and they are still below 500 when the calendar flips to July, they're going to be sellers. Like, there's just not going to be a position where they're going to be buying in July if they're below 500. But obviously July is a long time from now. And I think it's kind of important to remember, this dawned on me when I was in Philly this week, is that last year the Phillies like started 16-19, just like the Blue Jays did. The Phillies were below 500 on May 13th, 2023. Today is May 9th, 2024. And the Phillies went to the postseason and went to the NLCS. And this year they are obviously, to this point, the best team in baseball. So a lot can change from where you're at in early May, but obviously for the Blue Jays, a lot has to change for them to like even consider the posture of being a buyer come July.
Right. Yeah. Cause you know, they still have that best case scenario outcome, right? Of, oh my goodness, they were this sleeping giant all along. And then they just have this amazing finish to the season, just like the Phillies did. And they're a force. And so as long as that best case scenario exists, you know, with playoff odds that are, I don't know, now they're 26%, but let's say it's above 10%, you've got a shot, you're kind of in this thing, then yeah, they're going to play that out and see if they can build on that and see if they can boost that and improve their position. But at the same time, I mean, I just don't think that on talent, as presently constructed, this team is as good as last year's Phillies team. I have some real doubts about the offense and the bullpen. And, you know, whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing or totally indifferent to it, the reality is we're going to have a lot more time to see what that talent level looks like and where that talent level evens out. But at this point, I do have some doubts. I'm not necessarily convinced that, you know, George Springer is the Blue Jays equivalent of, you know, a Bryce Harper or JT Realmuto or Trey Turner, who's just, you know, about to erupt. Maybe that'll happen. That'll be awesome for the Blue Jays if it does and he goes on to have a 30-homer season. They're just the numbers and underlying information doesn't say that right now. So as you move ahead for the Jays, you look at record, you look at underlying performance and skills of the players, and you look at health. And then that will paint the picture and that will tell them exactly what path to take.
Yeah, and you know, those Fangraphs playoff odds have like fallen off rather significantly from the start of the season. Like, I think they've fallen off like 25 percentage points. You might know.
Yes,
exactly.
Well, I checked the other morning and it was, I want to say that it was only the Giants and Astros that had seen their playoff odds drop more.
Yeah, that's significant and that's objective. Like, that's not them just saying, oh, it feels like the Blue Jays aren't going to do well. That's not them saying, oh, the mood around the team, the vibe around the team's bad. They're having meetings. That is Zips and Steamer updating their rest of season projections based off of what, like, the recent performance from the players on the team, which is obviously weighted heavier, but also historical performance and also like how things have typically played out in baseball seasons past in similar situations. So that's pretty damning, right? Like, that Zips and Steamer are both like suggesting that the Blue Jays are going to need to be significantly better over the remainder of the season to get where they're trying to go. That these two objective models say that the Blue Jays have hurt their chances of qualifying for an expanded postseason that has never been easier to qualify for this much. So, you know, I think that that says a lot. But, you know, obviously, like, you flash back to the podcast that we were recording, like, at this time a year ago, and it was Matt Chapman is the American League player of the month and might win an MVP award and might get, like, a nine-figure long-term deal come free agency. We all know how that ended up playing out. And at that point as well, George Springer last April had a 599 OPS and looked extremely cooked. And for the rest of the season, he played to like a 761 OPS, which obviously is not tremendous, but is much better than he looked to begin last year. Brandon Belts as well. Ben Nicholson-Smith, like, calling for him to be released on the podcast.
That's right.
For the rest of the year after April, he was the Blue Jays' best hitter. So, you know, it's like it's like the Kahneman thing, right? Like, all you see is all there is, but there's a lot more still to come that can very dramatically change our opinions on the Blue Jays and on, you know, where they ultimately end up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of season left. And so for me, this is why, you know, I'm kind of circling around this, and like, this is going to be the least, like, the least exciting conclusion that you can draw. But like, my path forward for the Blue Jays right now is hold, you know, like, it's
don't sell yet. Buy.
Well, right. Cause like, what's the point? Like, you try to sell now. Okay. First of all, the buyers aren't sure exactly where they stand. So you're not going to have an easy time creating a market for these guys. So, you know, are you going to go out there and just like put up this giant white flag and piss off your players? You know, I just don't see an advantage to that, because if they do decide to sell, which again, I don't think has ever seemed as likely for 2024 as it does this week. If you decide to sell, you'll be able to do that. You can do that in July. You're obviously going to be scouting around the major leagues. You have systems in place to assess players with other professional organizations. So you can sell on July 15th or on July 30th and make that move. You can also buy, but I don't think they should buy today. Like, I don't think it makes sense, you know, to go out there and just trade the farm to get a couple relief pitchers because Eric Swanson doesn't look good. I don't see that as the move. Maybe if they win enough games, hey, it's late July, maybe you do want to trade for relief pitching and you're actually in it, and that makes sense. So to me, I don't know if you disagree with this, Arden, or where you sit with this, but I think that, and I understand in a media landscape where, like, the hotter the take, the better. This is like tepid as it gets. But like, I actually do think that, hey, it's May the 9th. It's not the worst thing just to hold and see how this plays out.
Yeah, it's completely premature to even be having the discussion about buying and selling. But, you know, we have to have the discussions that people want us to have so that people consume the product. Like, I will say that even if the Blue Jays get to a point in July where they're below 500 and their playoff odds are like single digits, and it's just completely unrealistic that they're going to contend and go to the postseason, and they end up selling, I don't think you're going to see a complete teardown. I don't think you're going to see the Blue Jays like say, yep, we're going into a rebuild and we're going to lose a whole ton of games in 2025 and try to draft high. Like, I don't think that you are going to see this team be at least like uncompetitive. I don't think you're going to see this team purposefully trying to lose. I don't think you're going to see like this front office not build a roster that is at least capable of competing for a third wild card spot at any time in the near future. I think that if the Blue Jays get to a point where not going to the postseason this year is what's looking realistic, I think it's more of like a reset or a refresh or like whatever sort of semantic that MLB front offices want to use, a pivot essentially, where obviously you're trading guys like Yusei Kikuchi and Jamie Garcia and Justin Turner and Kevin Kiermaier. You're considering what you do with guys like Bo and Vlad and some of your more, you know, some of the pieces that you have term on beyond this year, but who could also fetch you a pretty good return. And you're just trying to like shift your window forward because you can look at the roster resource payroll page and like you can see the two cliffs that are coming up in the next couple of off seasons. You need to shift this window and you need to get some more talent that is going to be under contract for longer term to help you be competitive through 25, 26, 27. But as long as you're going to be spending $200 million on payroll, Ben, there's no reason why you're not going to build a competitive roster year over year, even if it is just chock full of sort of short-term veterans who are going to help you win now, but not be around for a very long time.
Yeah, I think that's accurate for sure. I mean, 2025 is a whole different season from now. I can't believe we're even talking about 2025 in May. Then what a bad start to the season for the Jays. Like, and look, they might turn it around, but like 2025, it's a whole different year. You know, to me, to punt on 2025 at this point, you would be doing the Yankees and Red Sox and Orioles such a huge favor. Like, why? It's like you said before, it's never been easier to make the playoffs. Just see. I mean, so to me, closing off 2025 is like totally non-competitive. And this is a sport where you're trying to win. So like, what are you doing at that point? But, you know, for 2024, yeah, if you get to, you know, you're 4 or 5 games under 500, your playoff odds are 8%. I think it makes sense to sell at that point. I don't think it makes sense to hold on in the slim hope that you can turn things around if that's where they are in July. And at that point, I think it's a reasonable conversation to be had about, is Ross Atkins the person to do that, or do they go in a different direction? We don't know right now with the full information of you know, everything that would go into making that decision. So I'm not going to attempt to answer that question right now. But I think if you do decide that this team is not competitive in a season where they're spending beyond the CBT and they have this kind of young talent in place, that would be a question that Mark Shapiro would have to answer for himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like that decision, you know, the decision of buy or sell, the decision of what do we want to look like in 25, 26, the decision of who do we want to execute this vision. Like those decisions are so far off. Like it's just kind of pointless to sit here and speculate about them right now, because like neither of us can actually sit here and say we know what that would look like and what the Blue Jays would do in those circumstances, because I don't think the Blue Jays know, because as I said earlier, it's May 9th and the Blue Jays aren't thinking like that. Like they're thinking about how to win now. Like they're thinking about how to win more for the rest of this month. They're thinking about how to get above 500. They're probably thinking a little bit about the draft, but I think that a lot of front office resources right now are honestly directed at just how do we get better day to day? Like what can we do now with our roster? What can we do with our deployment? What can we do with our lineups? What can we do with how we use information to like win more now and turn this season around? Like there's nobody within the Blue Jays who has mailed it in and who has checked out and waved a white flag. Like everybody's efforts are still very intensely focused on how do we beat the Minnesota Twins this weekend.
Right. And think about, okay, so like Mark Shapiro, he's the one who would be signing off on any big decisions, right? So, okay, his stated goal for the organization is to bring World Series to Toronto. You're not going to do that if you just sell everyone. You're not going to do that lightly. You're not going to do that because you're 3 games under 500 on May the 9th. And again, that's bad. They don't want to be 3 games under 500 and play the way they've played. But that is also not enough reason to just pull the trigger and punt on the season at this point. And anything that we've seen from Mark Shapiro, who's now been here for 9 years, so we have a pretty good sense of how he operates as the president of this baseball team. He's a very methodical, procedural person who will gather a lot of information and consider different perspectives instead of making kind of a more impetuous or impulsive decision. So I would expect that to be the case in any decisions that he's making as far as where this franchise goes from here. And there is still more information to be gathered. So, and there are still scenarios where, you know, again, for Mark Shapiro, of course, his best case scenario is they win and the team is winning, the stadium is full, he gets a contract extension offer from Rogers. Like all those things are things that would be good from his vantage point. And you don't accomplish that by pulling the plug because your first 37 games have been underwhelming.
Yeah, he didn't just pour, you know, $300-400 million into the Rogers Center to not put a competitive product to play there. like to not have a good team playing there 81 times a year. And yeah, like you said, like these are not people who make rash decisions. These are not people who make decisions based on emotion. These are people who have actually built in structures to their decision-making processes to remove emotion. And so that they can take away the, cause like, look, people with the Blue Jays are upset about how things are going, right? Like they're mad watching the results. Like they don't love the outcomes. Like none of them are just like, oh, well, we lost again. Moving on, like they don't like it, like they're not having a good time, like
they hate it worse than most people. Like it's it weighs on people for sure.
They are as emotional about this as fans are, you know, like they are not robotic about this at all. But they have to strip away that emotion when they are making like some of the very large, substantial, significant decisions about the future direction of this team and of this franchise. And I promise you that nobody in the front office thinks that 37 data points out of 162 is enough information on which to make those decisions.
That's right. And so when I say hold, I'm not saying hold all season. In fact, I think that would be the biggest mistake they could make. But for now, I think you can hold. And that still leaves open the possibility for big shifts. Maybe those are leadership shifts. Maybe those are payroll or personnel shifts. You know, shifts in the way they go about doing things behind the scenes. Who knows? You have to be open to all kinds of different big decisions. And I'm very much open to that as I look at this team. But for now, the scale of change that I would be looking at would be more smaller scale stuff. And maybe that's like, I don't know. Do you replace Daniel Vogelbach with Spencer Horwitz? Do you bump George Springer to number 5? That is the scale for me where I would say, yep, do that today.
And I think you're seeing like a lot of smaller scale stuff happen. It just hasn't been quite as noticeable. A couple of weeks ago, Davis Schneider wasn't an everyday player. Davis Schneider was like a matchups guy who was in obviously against lefties and then also against like righties who work in areas of the zone that work for his swing. And, you know, he's got this like uppercut swing pass. So you try to sort of match up the pitch plane with the swing path, put him in really good matchups. As an aside, by the way, Davis Schneider, like totally cool with that deployment. I asked him about it and he said, yeah, I like it. It builds confidence in me, honestly, when I know that I'm being put in spots that I can succeed in. But those days are over. Sorry to Davis, because he's now an everyday player and he's starting against Aaron Nola. Davis Schneider, a guy who is like dead fastball hitter, who had one hit off a right-handed curveball in his big league career coming into his start against Aaron Nola, facing a dude with one of the best curveballs of recent years, plus 84 run value on Aaron Nola's curveball. This is one of the best curveballs you're going to see in baseball. Aaron Nola, a guy who's like legendary for just not making mistakes over the heart of the plate. Like he's kind of Bassett-esque in the way that he uses a bunch of soft pitches to work around the edges of the zone. This is not a good matchup for Davis Schneider. Davis Schneider starts against Aaron Nola. He starts every single night. Like the Blue Jays have shifted there. Think about when Kevin Kiermaier went on the IL and think about how seamless it would have been for the Blue Jays to just bring up Nathan Lucas, who's like another left-handed bat who plays strong defense and is a capable base runner. Like that just would have been such a easier roster fit, but they didn't go that way. They looked for a spark. They looked for big swings with Addison Barger, right? This guy who had never played at the big leagues, who has this aggressive all or nothing approach, who's just up there taking shots to try to put balls in the seats and try to like hit balls as hard as possible. They brought him up and they played him in a position he's never played in his life. Like they made a massive sacrifice defensively, end up paying the price for it as well. And Addison Barger ends up going 1-for-18 and is now back in the minors. But the Blue Jays took a real chance there and I think went against the type of decision-making and type of process that they typically like to utilize, because they are doing things differently. And I think they are responding to the way this season has played out to this point. I think Danny Jansen in Philly, I know I'm going on, but like he starts on the Tuesday night ahead of a Wednesday day game that he's catching. JT Realmuto didn't start on the Tuesday night when he was catching the Wednesday day game. The Phillies gave him the day off because they can do that because of the lead that they have built. Blue Jays can't do that. They need Danny Jansen's bat in the lineup. So he's playing the night game before a day game he's catching. And the way they get his bat into the lineup is by asking the oldest player in the league to play third base behind a guy in Jose Berríos who has like a 46% ground ball rate. Do you think that like anyone in the Blue Jays like research department, any of the analysts, any of the advanced scouts are like, yeah, this is a good idea? Do you think any of the high performance people are like, yeah, let's do this. This is the way we want to be doing things. No, the Blue Jays are going against the way that they would like to be doing things because they are responding to how this season's played out to this point. It's not as dramatic as dropping George Springer, but they are making moves around the margins that go against the way they would like to be playing this out.
Yeah, and I will say too, just in fairness to analysts, I know you're not trying to dunk on anyone here, but you know, I do think that like a lot of analytically minded people would say, hey, this is a time where you're going to ask a little bit more of your players because you can't afford to let this thing get too far away from you. So it actually might make sense, analytically speaking, to push and to get more out of these guys, and for Danny Jansen to respond to that the way he did is great. I mean, by and large, they have had that urgency. I think that's a really good point that, you know, this team has been playing with a sense of urgency. Unfortunately, it just hasn't been working because, you know, they lost 10 of 14. And then that's where they get to this point that they're last in the American League East. And they can come back from this. Teams do come back from this. And we remember those examples like the Diamondbacks who, you know, snuck into the playoffs and made it to the World Series. We probably forget the examples of teams that start off slow and then just stay slow and fade and have these, you know, awful seasons. And so the Jays are hoping that, you know, they can be one of those exceptional teams that we remember. At this point, I'm not seeing a ton of reason to believe that that's the case. If I'm being totally honest, I have my doubts, but you know what? It wouldn't be a baseball season if there wasn't some intrigue and if there wasn't some, you know, if I didn't make some wrong predictions too. So don't, just because I have doubts doesn't mean they're going to play poorly. I mean, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, though, you're right that it hasn't been working. Although, like, I do think that the response on Wednesday in Philadelphia was absolutely huge. Like, on Tuesday, the plate appearances just were not competitive. 18 of 33 plate appearances that night against Christian Sanchez. And I think it was just Spencer Turnbull was the only other Phillies pitcher to throw. 18 of 33 plate appearances ended in three pitches or fewer. The Blue Jays had five starters that night who saw less than 10 pitches on the night. Like, that's not good enough. Like, those, like, that's why they had a meeting following that game, is because the plate appearances just weren't competitive enough. And even when the results aren't there, and even when you're frustrated and it's a long road trip and you'd rather be home and things aren't going your way and it's kind of easy to quit, like, you can't let that happen. Like, you have to continue to grind and to lean on opposition pitchers and find a way to do something positive with your trip to the plate, even if a ball isn't dropping in. And we saw the reverse of that, I thought, on Wednesday when the Blue Jays put up much better plate appearances and obviously like won a game and found a way to string some hits together and move some runners around and just played a lot better like 12 hours after the Tuesday night's effort came to an end. So like, I think they deserve credit for that. George Springer in particular, who was playing ill and was playing sick that day and was a catalyst in the third inning and made an amazing grab in right field. I know he's a bit of a lightning rod, but I mean, you know, people around the Blue Jays were like very impressed with the effort that he gave there, just considering like how ill he was on that day. But, you know, back to your point, it's not working to this point. Not because like the Blue Jays aren't behaving differently and not because they aren't taking on risk and not because they aren't putting players in uncomfortable positions. It's not working because their best players haven't been their best players. Like, it's very simple. Bo Bichette has a 50 weighted runs created plus. George Springer has a 68. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has a 90. Like, if those things continue, excuse me, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has a 112. He's actually,
yeah, he's heated up lately. Recently. Yeah.
My bad. Apologies, Vladdy. You're playing better recently.
And it is gone. He demolished it to left field. Got the count in his favor, got one he liked, and hit it way out of here for a grand slam.
And but also, like, over the course of a season, he needs to be better than 112. Like, and of those three, if the top guy is a 112 and the other two guys are a 90 and a 50, excuse me, a 68 and a 50, that's not going to work. Like, this whole thing isn't going to work if that's the case for your, like, three guys who had the most plate appearances last season and will likely have the most plate appearances this season. If that is the overall offensive output from them, like, I don't care what you do with the batting order. I don't care, like, if you fire John Schneider. I don't care if you march the hitting staff into Lake Ontario. Like, I don't care what you do. It's just not going to work if Guerrero, Springer, and Bichette are underperforming to the extent that they have to this point.
Yeah, that is for sure. I would expect some of those players to turn things around. Don't know if I have full confidence in that entire group, but let's dive into that after we take a break here on At the Letters. We'll go a little bit more granular as we continue our Blue Jays discussion here on ATL. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to At the Letters, the May 9th, 2024 edition, as we discuss the Blue Jays. Feels somehow like it's later in the season than it is, maybe because we're having discussions that are normally had in July. But to move away from the big, big picture of, you know, the buy, the sell, let me throw a few small-scale changes at you, Arden. I'm going to throw them at you rapid fire. You can jump in on any or all of these. But these are things that I think the Blue Jays could do in the short term while they await clarity on the bigger picture direction of this franchise. One, Daniel Vogelbach out, Spencer Horwitz in. Two, George Springer out of the leadoff. We've talked about this for a couple weeks. He's not producing. He shouldn't be the leadoff hitter, clearly. So he should be later in the order. Maybe it's David Schneider or someone else who comes up. Danny Jansen, get him higher in the batting order. Again, not the be-all, end-all, but he's hitting really well. Have him hit cleanup while he's healthy. Eric Swanson, keep him away from leverage. His stuff isn't good enough right now. Waivers, look for pitching on waivers. The Jays have lost some arms. Their 40-man, the back of their 40-man could use some reinforcements. I think they should try to find some pitching on waivers. So where does that sit with you? What do you think about that?
You fixed it, Ben. You fixed it.
There it is.
You solved all the problems. All right, do you want to go one by one here? Well, just Vogelbach and Horwitz. I mean, obviously the Blue Jays have gotten next to nothing from Daniel Vogelbach this year. It's the 26th roster spot, which they don't use anyway. Like, we've seen Bradley Zimmer sitting around and doing nothing there. Like, we've seen Nathan Lucas sitting around and doing nothing there. I mean, Vogelbach's had a bit more run lately, and I think that probably could have something to do with the Blue Jays just trying to evaluate if there is something there before they do make a decision. But we're still talking about the guy who's made the fewest plate appearances on the team. So
right,
we're not talking about a dramatic impact here, whether it's him or someone else. If it is someone else, I agree. Spencer Horwitz has absolutely earned a big league call up. He's got like a 460 OBP leading off for Buffalo and a gang of hits and is putting up really competitive plate appearances on a nightly basis.
Horwitz drills one to right center field, going back as Lockridge towards the track in front of the Bison bullpen. Looks up, home run! The first of the season for Spencer Horwitz. And it's 2-1 Buffalo.
I think the difficulty there is just if you bring him up into the roster spot that doesn't play, how is it a good thing for you or a good thing for Spencer Horwitz to have him sitting around on your bench and maybe getting one or two plate appearances a week when he could be playing every day in AAA and staying in a rhythm and a routine and being ready if and when you need him due to injury?
Yeah, here's my thing with that. It's And this might be underselling Spencer Horwitz and what he can mean to this team. But to me, this is still potentially a win now season. Spencer Horwitz is 26 years old. It's not like he's 19. It's not like he's Arjun Namalo and needs to come up and get everyday reps. Like, I actually am okay. If it stalls his development, so be it. You need the best hitters in the major league. So that's where I would land with the Horwitz one.
How do you foresee him getting in? Because you got a first baseman in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and you got a DH in Justin Turner, who has been playing more third base than I think any of us expected him to. And a lot of that has to do with the urgency the Blue Jays have had to try to sneak other bats into the lineup, such as Danny Jansen's. How are you going to get Spencer Horwitz into this lineup regularly enough to make a contribution?
I think it wouldn't be regular. I'd be fine if he was here. Maybe he starts once, twice a week and pinch hits a couple times a week. I would be fine with that.
Fair enough. So number two was George Springer out of the leadoff spot, correct?
Yes. Now, should we come back to that one? Because there might be a little more discussion there.
Let's do Jansen quickly. You want Jansen higher in the batting order. I agree with you, but I mean, he's already hitting fifth semi-regularly. I mean, two of his last four games, he's hit fifth. So you just want him up one spot. I mean, fine, but who's coming down? Justin Turner?
And I'm fine with him hitting fifth, actually. So no massive complaints there. It's just if there's, you know, say, for example, if Springer is coming later in the order and Jansen moves up, I'm totally good with that.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen Varsho hitting seconds lately. I mean, we'll see how much of that continues. I mean, obviously he's not going to do that against lefties, but it seems like against righties, the Blue Jays have been trying that on for size, and we're going to get to Springer, obviously. Guerrero has to be up top. I think you like Turner hitting cleanup. Like, the results haven't been quite the same lately, but the quality of plate appearance has been. And we'll get to this later again, obviously, but I think that Turner might be an option to move to the top at some point. So, like, to me, it's just kind of hard to get Danny Jansen into that top four, and I think that the benefit of moving him from five to four is really just marginal.
Put it this way, you don't want to see him hitting seventh. You know, I think that or eighth. And again, none of this is going to totally transform things, but I think the way he's going right now, higher is better for Jansen. So
no, yeah, you got to have Davis Schneider hitting seventh every day.
Yeah, I mean, we will see. Yeah. We will see where that one leads.
Let's get to him later as well, by the way. Let's get to him later. But sorry, what's your next one?
So the next one will be Swanson. So, you know, I know they've already started shifting things in this direction, but basically not a guy you want to see in leverage right now.
No, and the issues for Swanson are twofold. And number one, primarily, is location. Like, he has been leaving some pitches in some really terrible parts of the zone, and they've been getting hammered because these are big league hitters. And, like, your splitter can move a ton, but if you hang it up over the plate, guys are going to absolutely crush it. And Eric Swanson's splitter has been getting absolutely hammered because he's been leaving it in poor spots, and he will tell you this. Like, he will say, yes, my location has not been good enough to him. And I'm coming around on this. That was very much an issue earlier in the season. His first few appearances of the year were just bad. And those are his words. I talked to him, just bad. But lately he thinks that he's given something away on the mound, and the Blue Jays think that as well. They've adjusted his delivery a little bit. They've made some changes. You'll see him looking different on the mound going forward. I think that there is something there. Again, it doesn't excuse the bad location. He has to be better with that. But, like, when I look back at it and I'm like, when we were watching that Royals game and Bobby Witt Jr. goes down to hit a splitter off his shoelaces at 105 miles per hour and somehow keeps it fair, at the time, Ben, and I think I texted this to you and Shai, I was like, Bobby Witt Jr. is the greatest hitter I've ever seen. How did he just do that? This guy's an MVP. What an incredible hitter. And now I'm looking back on it kind of like, wait a second. Like, maybe that was a little too good to be true. When Eddie Rosario, who's hitting like .120, is getting a splitter down and in to a lefty, which, again, like, not a great location, but also go back and watch that pitch. Not the worst location. And go back and watch the times that Eric Swanson has thrown that pitch to lefties in prior years, such as Rafael Devers, such as... pick another Anthony Rizzo, like, such as really good left-handed hitters who have, if not swung and missed at it, just hit foul balls on it, because it is a hard pitch to square up and keep fair just with the way that it's moving. When Eddie Rosario is taking a really comfortable swing at it and hitting a home run, which he has not shown much of a capability to do this year, it's not like, oh wow, Eric Swanson's in a really bad place, even Eddie Rosario's taking him yard. It's how did Eddie Rosario do that? So I am starting to come around a little bit on the idea that he might be tipping as well.
Okay. Interesting. Now, okay. So in the meantime, though, like, let's say it's Friday or Saturday against the Twins. You have a lead. You're up a couple runs. It's the sixth or seventh inning. Do you, like, I would put forward that it makes sense for the Blue Jays to go to Zach Pop ahead of Swanson. Where do you sit with that?
I think on current form, like, Zach Pop has shown you something in his last couple of outings. I don't think you can forget the greater track record. And I think that when you look at the greater track record of Swanson v. Pop, it's pretty obvious that, like, Swanson's guy has had a lot more success in leverage against the best hitters on the planet. But like current form, so last few outings, like yes, Pop is ahead of Swanson, but I think it would only take a few good outings of Swanson having refined his delivery and ironed out, you know, some of the things that were happening for him on the mound that were leading to his adverse results, and also showing better command would very quickly put Swanson back ahead of Pop in the pecking order.
Yeah, I think within a week this could change, but as of now, I would have Pop ahead of Swanson. So, all right, so far we're more or less, you know, not, you know, kind of agreeing on this stuff, it seems.
One more on the bullpen before you move off of it. The Jimmy Garcia situation has just hamstrung the Blue Jays in such a serious way. Like, he was not available again on Wednesday in Philadelphia. Yeah.
That's the whole road trip. He didn't pitch.
The entire road trip. The last time he pitched was April 28th, and it is now May 9th. So
he essentially had an IL stint, just was on the active roster.
Right, and that hurts you because you're carrying one less pitcher in your bullpen, and as we just said, there are other pitchers in your bullpen who you would have a hard time trusting and leverage, and obviously, like, Chad Green, still not off a mound yet, unavailable. Bowden Francis, at least he's off a mound, but unavailable. Yariel Rodriguez, saw him in Philadelphia. He's back with the team, but unavailable on the IL. So if you're John Schneider and Pete Walker and you're, you know, getting like a four inning Alec Manoah start, and you're thinking, you know, say you do retake the lead, but you've got to cover like five innings from the end of your starter to the end of the game, you're saying, all right, if I can get this to the ninth, like, that's Jordan Romano's inning. Jordan Romano, ninth, boom. You got four innings before that. You got to navigate your way through with Trevor Richards, Tim Mazza, Eric Swanson, Yenesis Cabrera, and Nate Pearson, and Zach Pop as well. You're going to be thrusting somebody into leverage who has not necessarily thrived in leverage over the course of their career. And you are going to be putting pitchers into matchups that aren't necessarily advantageous. And you are going to be asking pitchers who typically throw like 15 to 18 pitches in an outing to throw like 22 to 25. Like, that's just the situation the Blue Jays have been in with their bullpen. And I think that's why they've had some of the results that they've had.
Yeah. A lot of it comes down to home runs, right? So is that a good thing or a bad thing? The bad news is home runs are literally the worst thing that you can possibly allow as a pitcher. So you don't like it if your bullpen leads Major League Baseball in home runs allowed, which the Blue Jays do. On the other hand, that's not predictive. It's predictive to an extent, but it's not fully predictive. You wouldn't expect that the Blue Jays are going to be this bad moving forward. I don't think it's, I mean, obviously it has been a very bad bullpen. Moving forward, I think there's reason to believe it can be more at least of an average bullpen, which would be a huge improvement compared to what they've been, because what they've been has been literally the worst in baseball.
Yeah, the Blue Jays bullpen leads baseball with a 14.2% home run to fly ball rate. That seems unsustainable. Like, that is just as far to one end of the luck spectrum as things can get. Like I said, a lot of this has to do with execution, like with pitch placement, you know, obviously with sequencing, with the quality of pitcher. Like, a lot of this has to, like, I'm not writing it all off as just luck, but we do know that home runs are like the event in baseball that could be the most influenced by luck, whether that's park factors or weather or just like a guy not getting it right on the sweet spot and hitting like a 398 foot flyout. I do think the 14.2% home run to fly ball rate suggests that Blue Jays relievers will very likely allow fewer homers going forward.
Well, yeah, because I mean, when you watch the games really closely, as I'm sure a bunch of our listeners do, I know you do, Arden, when you watch the games really closely, you'll notice pitchers hang breaking balls all the time. Like, they miss with location all the time, and they will just hang. It might be a 0-0 curveball, and the batter's just frozen. He's not expecting it, but there are a lot of pitches that could be hammered for home runs that aren't, and so there is an unpredictability to it. To take nothing away, the Blue Jays pitchers have not been good enough. That needs to change. So, you know, we will see where that leads. And to me, this is part of the reason that I think they should be looking for pitchers on the waiver wire. Where do you land on that one?
Yeah, I think that's just a 12-month a year thing, right? Like, I don't think they ever shouldn't be trying to you know, go acquire a Brendan Little and like get him onto your roster because you have an opening, or like, I don't think they should ever not be doing things like that. You know, a Joel Kunal, right? Where it's like, hey, like, this guy's available. It's just going to cost us cash and we have a 40-man spot. Cool. Bring him in. Maybe he's something. If we need a 40-man spot in a week, it's probably going to be him getting DFA'd. But like, I don't think you should ever not be churning relief types at the end of your 40-man roster.
Fair. So from that standpoint, that was probably my weakest take. Of course, they're going to be looking for relievers on waivers. That's fine. But let's get to the one that maybe has the most juice, although I'm surprised this is even really a debate at this point. I'm honestly, like, I'm surprised that George Springer's still hitting leadoff. We all know he's one of the greatest leadoff hitters of all time. That is a fact. The numbers back that up.
Fly ball left center. Start the day for George Springer and the Blue Jays.
Take nothing away from him and what he's done in that position, but he's not hitting well right now. So to me, he doesn't belong in that position.
Yeah, his WRC plus, which is currently 69, so that's what, 31 points below league average. That ranks within the bottom 12% of qualified hitters. It ranks second last to Sal Frelick among the 28 players to make at least 65 plate appearances as a club's leadoff hitter this season. So among MLB leadoff hitters, George Springer has been the second worst in terms of overall offensive contribution.
Right, because when hitters produce at this level, their managers don't bat them leadoff.
Yes. What is your alternative?
It could be David Schneider, could be Justin Turner, even a Kevin Biggio, depending on the matchup. I know he's fallen off. He hasn't been hitting well, but in a week's time, sure. You know, I would be open to different configurations there, but I would lean most heavily at this point on Schneider and on Turner.
You don't have a hit yet, but now Justin Turner will knock one into center for an RBI single to bring in Springer, and it is indeed an early 1-0 lead for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, Kevin Biggio has 5 plate appearances this month. That is part of, you know, people say the Blue Jays aren't doing anything to try to get out of their rut. Like, no, they're doing things. Like, Kevin Biggio is no longer playing. And trust me, like, Kevin Biggio is better when he plays regularly in good matchups. Like, we've seen this over his time in the big leagues. He's just not getting ABs at all right now because the performance hasn't been there. Like, the Blue Jays have made very clearly, like, a performance-based decision on Kevin Biggio playing a lot less frequently and David Schneider playing every day. I would be open to seeing what it looks like with Schneider leading off. I don't know that there's enough contact there for him to really, like, be a great leadoff hitter, but he has shown some very competitive plate appearances of late. His contact rate has gotten better. Like, last year, it was like the worst on the team. Like, he was just swinging and missing a lot, particularly in the zone. Not something you want from your leadoff hitter. This year, he's made some swing changes. He's adjusted his swing path, working with Matt Haig. He's done a much better job of getting his bat to pitches in different areas of the zone, of spoiling pitchers' pitches, of getting to the high fastball, which is always going to give him trouble. But if he's able to just spoil some of those and get to another pitch, he can get to something lower that he can handle. And he's always had a pretty discerning eye and a pretty low chase rate. So I think that the ability to just make better contact is allowing him to, like, get to more pitches where pitchers miss off the plate and take like an 0-2 to a 1-2 and then foul one off and then get to a 2-2 because he takes another pitch. So I do think there are encouraging things there from him lately. So I could see giving him a little run there. I'm kind of curious how it would look. I still think, as I thought in the offseason, that Justin Turner is this team's best option at leadoff. Like, they don't clearly have a prototypical leadoff hitter, and they clearly don't have like an easy, seamless answer for someone to put in there. I think that Justin Turner is the best fit. So that is who I would be leading off going forward. But I also understand the argument of you wanting him, you know, hitting fourth and coming up with runners on more frequently.
The thing I don't really see in this is a compelling argument to keep Springer in the leadoff spot. And I know he has been a good hitter. Like, he was a great hitter with the Astros for the first couple of years with the Blue Jays. He was a very, very good hitter. I don't know that when you look at his recent body of work, whether that's the last 12 months, whether that's the last 37 games, not to say that, like, he's a major league player. He makes some really good defensive plays. He obviously leads the team in stolen bases. He does some things well. You want this guy on your team, not saying otherwise. But is he so good of a hitter that he should be in that leadoff spot? When I look at him offensively, when I look at the numbers offensively, I don't really see the case to leave him there.
So talking to John Schneider about this in Philadelphia, the Blue Jays are being patient and they're giving George Springer some grace and they're saying, hey, like, you are not the player that you've been to this point. And even if you're down on George Springer, and even if, as we all should, even if you're baking in like decline for him here in his mid-30s, which makes total sense, I don't think he's a true talent, like high 60s WRC plus player. You have much bigger problems than him where he hits in the batting order if he's going to be like a 68, 69 WRC plus guy. You've got major, major issues.
Oh, yeah. That's, and no one's like, saying that.
That's the case, right? So I think the Blue Jays are having some patience and like, and I understand this drives people nuts, but are saying like, throughout your career, you have been so much better than this. You have earned some rope. You have earned some time to try to work through this. And I get it. You could say, why don't you let him work through it further down in the lineup? I'm sympathetic to the argument. I understand. I also understand why the Blue Jays are doing it the way that they are.
Yeah. I understand it in that I follow the arguments. I just don't agree with them, and I remain unconvinced, because when I look at George Springer, what he did in 2021, what he did in 2017, again, great player, but it doesn't really have a bearing on the present dude who's here on the team right now. And when I look at his last calendar year, I have it in front of me here, 20 homers, 21 steals, 255 average, 326 on base, 401 slug. That's a 104 WRC plus player, 2.2 war. It's a good player. Again, I think George Springer is still a good player and he belongs in this lineup. I'm not saying you should bench the guy at all, but 104 WRC plus, and it's been worse, obviously, recently. So he's maybe a little above average as a hitter. I think the Jays can do better. I think they can do better than a little above average, maybe. You know, if things turn around, I think that they can do, you know, like you said, Justin Turner would be a better option right now, the way he's swinging the bat right now and delivering against fastballs and making swing decisions and all those things. So we'll see where it leads, right? It's interesting. And I'm not saying in any of this that it's going to make or break the fate of their season. That's why I've kind of included it within these more, you know, nuts and bolts, like small scale tinkering that the Jays could do, because I think that's ultimately what it is tinkering. But I do find it interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of skirts the big issue of the 68 WRC plus. Like, that's the actual issue. It's like how he's performing. You could like drop him in the batting order, fine, who cares? Like, you need him to perform better wherever he's hitting. I don't care how you shuffle these hitters. If Bo Bichette's going to have a 50 WRC plus, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you hit him. Like, if Bichette and Springer combined are going to have a 118 WRC plus, combined, put their 68 and their 50 together, it's just, the season's over. Like, forget about it, right? So you just need these guys to perform better. Like, you still see the flashes with Springer, right? Like, you see him playing sick on Wednesday and he's like the catalyst in that third inning, right, with the single and the stolen base, and he scores the first run. You see the play on the Schwarber flare and in foul territory. Like, I think there's no questioning Springer's commitment and capability defensively, but I certainly do think there is reason to question whether he should continue as the Blue Jays leadoff hitter. And listening to John Schneider talk about it, like, it's something he's considered. Obviously, this is his job to consider these things. He hasn't believed it's been the right time to do it yet. You know, as he said, I'm paraphrasing again, but as he said, like, I'm well aware there's other players that can lead off. Like, I know I have other options, and I know that George Springer hasn't performed, and George knows that he hasn't performed. You know, I think Schneider at this point has just been patient with it and waited for it to turn. But ultimately, that patience does eventually run out. And like as Schneider conceded, like there is a point where you kind of hit your head against the wall enough times where you sort of just get to the realization that, okay, we need to move things around. We need to make a change. I do think that point will come, but it obviously hasn't come yet.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually, looking at the last calendar year splits, just because I have them up here for the Blue Jays. Davis Schneider, best WRC plus in the course of the last year. Danny, he's at 165. Danny Jansen, 147. Kirk's down at 85. And Bo, actually, is right 100 on the nose for the last calendar year. I would not have guessed that. But yeah, that's where things are at. Tinkering-wise, do you have any suggestions that I should consider that you've been thinking of as you've been covering the games for the last week or so?
Getting Spencer Horwitz onto the roster makes sense. I'm here for that. I don't think it's the time right now for Aurelvis Martinez, although I do think it could be the time for that this summer. Otherwise, like, there aren't a lot of things you can do with like the situation that they're in right now with like who's available and who's not. Like, I think it gets interesting with your number five starter if you have like Ariel Rodriguez available. Does he make sense as a number five starter? Does he make sense out of your bullpen? What do you do with Alek Manoah in that situation? So like that could be one spot you could tinker with, but like otherwise, you know, kind of as I said, like the Blue Jays have been like pulling levers and pushing buttons of late. They're not getting credit for it, but they like absolutely are maneuvering to try to make like change the course that they've been on. To your point, it just hasn't been working.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Bo Bichette hit sixth the other day. He hasn't hit that low in like 2 years. And clearly like, he's been, you know, you look at the production and like it just has not been there. But, you know, if I had told you 3 weeks ago, a month ago, that Dalton Varsho would be hitting second and Bo Bichette would be hitting sixth. Like if we had said that in spring training, it'd be nuts.
Yeah, we'd be surprised by a lot of stuff about this team if you'd told us the state of things in spring training. Mostly bad surprises. Mostly, yeah, pretty rough ones. But yeah, you know, I don't know if we would have been surprised by this or not, but we should also touch on Alek Manoah because he did make his season debut against the Washington Nationals on Sunday. And that was a start where he showed some promise. I mean, he struck out the side in his first inning and his stuff was moving better.
And he got him. Another well-located two-seam fastball. And that is five strikeouts through two innings for Alek Manoah.
And there were also some rough points for Alek Manoah. So that's just to set it up really broadly. What did you take away from his season debut?
There was good and there was bad. Like even just like that first inning that you referenced was like such an adventure because it really wasn't just the, you know, striking out the side. It was like he threw 29 pitches and maybe half of them were strikes, and half of those strikes were like super uncomfortable, awkward swings, like great swing and miss stuff. And then like half of his balls were missing by a foot. And he walked two dudes and probably almost hit another one. And there was an error in the inning and an unearned run. And like that, it was like, it was such an insane reintroduction to Major League Baseball for the first time in 9 months. Right. And then you look at the second inning and it was like, whoa, vintage Alek Manoah. Like he was confident and had great tempo on the mound and the stuff was good. Like the stuff that we saw in that second inning was the best that we have seen since like the Cy Young candidate year. Like that's just as good as we've seen him in a long time. And then obviously things went downhill in the third and the fourth. And Manoah just wasn't able to stop the bleeding when he was missing the zone and he was walking hitters and, you know, he's getting ahead of guys and then not being able to put them away and giving up hits and like leaving sliders over the plate. And those are getting hammered. So like it's hard. Yeah, I don't think that a one start sample of Alek Manoah in the big leagues is enough to come out and say he's fixed, he's cooked, he's anything. Like, I think it was what it was. There were some things to build on from it. I'll be very interested to see how he looks against the Twins. Some very dangerous left-handed hitters in that lineup. The Twins also a team that have had a pretty good idea of how to approach Blue Jays pitchers and how to have a plan against what Blue Jays pitchers are trying to do to them. So I think that outing will be very interesting. But some good and some bad in it. And, you know, considering the alternatives, completely understand why Alec Manoah is remaining in the rotation.
Yes, he should be in the rotation. You and I spoke about this before they actually made the official decision to call him up. I stand by the take that it was the right time to try him in the rotation and to see what you have and to bring him back. And I think that was the right time. Obviously, it didn't go according to plan as far as the results in that one. But I think you keep giving him a couple turns and you see what happens. And obviously, you adjust on the fly. And he doesn't have promises of being in that rotation on July the 15th, the way, you know, like a Kevin Gausman does, assuming he's healthy. But I think you keep seeing how it goes. I do agree that there were some positives and some negatives, as you outlined. When I looked at the start, you know, I'm watching to see if he throws strikes. And afterwards, I talked to a scout with another team who had seen the Manoah footage and watched him pretty closely from a mechanical standpoint. And the scout was not really impressed. He thought that Manoah wasn't doing a good enough job of repeating his delivery. Talked about, you know, the landing where he wasn't pointing toward the mound, wasn't moving downhill enough to really generate power from the ground and push toward home plate in kind of a unified way that it would allow him to make the most of his power and repeat his delivery. So that's the opinion of a neutral observer, obviously not someone for the Nationals or someone for the Blue Jays, but someone with kind of no stake in this one, thought that you know, the mechanics of this will determine a lot about what Manoah can do moving forward. Because if he can be consistent mechanically, the stuff, and I know people bristle at this when they hear this, but the actual stuff leaving his hand is good. Like, there was better break, and you have that vertical break, and you have the speed to it, but there's the need to locate that consistently and to be able to throw that to different areas of the strike zone consistently that will make the difference between Manoah as a guy who's scattering and behind in counts and a guy who can be more of an impact pitcher.
Yeah, it's not enough just to have good stuff unless, like, it's, you know, Aroldis Chapman stuff or whatever, right? Like, it's just not enough. You know, Eric Swanson, like, his stuff year over year is completely consistent. Like, he's throwing the exact same splitter as he was last year, the exact same fastball, same shape, same velocity, same movement. He's just not locating it, so it's been getting hammered. Alec Manoah, his stuff is better. His fastball velo from last year is what I mean. Like, his fastball velo is better. The slider has more bite. It looks different. Like, the action on it's a bit more downward now than horizontal side to side. That should give it a better miss pattern. The stuff is better, but he just wasn't locating it consistently. And as, you know, the scout relayed to you, like, it's mechanical for him. Like, it's repeating his delivery, it's consistently getting to his release point. Like, that's the odyssey that he's been on for the last year and change, is just like trying to get synced up in his delivery and trying to have tempo down the mound and trying to get his arm, his hand, his release to the exact same point every single time so that he can throw pitches repeatedly and locate them reliably and have the conviction that he needs to really snap those sliders, like, to really rip them, not to be guiding them into the plate and trying to aim them, because that's when you get in trouble. That's when you leave stuff over the heart of the zone. You want to be ripping it strike to ball. You want the slider to be on the same plane as the fastball for like 55 feet before it just breaks off for those last 5 feet and 6 inches. That's how you get swing and miss. That's how you get soft contact. That's how you get results, you know? So this is why Alec Manoah's hands are lower in his delivery this year. He's not doing the thing that you saw him do in the past where he had his hands up by his jaw. They're down by his stomach. Like, this is something Pete Walker's done with a ton of guys dating back to like Jay Happ. You know, he's done this with Yusei Kikuchi. He's done it with Jimmy Garcia. You keep the hands down, so it's just a more direct path. It's just a simpler delivery for you to get to your release point and to consistently find it so that hopefully your command is more consistent. So that's a work in progress, clearly, for Manoah. Like, he was absolutely spraying his pitches at times in that start, but he was also generating awkward swings at others. You know, like, he was over the plate too much with the slider, clearly, but he also had some really good sliders, and I thought located some really good sinkers arm side to lefties. So it was kind of an uneven mixed bag of a start.
Yeah, and if you're comparing it to the idea of like a really good major league starting pitcher, the consistency wasn't there. at the same time, you compare this to how Manoah looked last year, he looks better. Like he, you talk about that tempo down the mound, he does look more athletic. Part of that is being in better shape. Part of that is just mechanically and getting to a point that he can repeat better. So he looks better and more athletic. Maybe as the season progresses and he gets more reps, he can continue finding that consistency with the delivery. That's the best case scenario. But in the meantime, while he's still sorting that out, it means that the Blue Jays have some uncertainty at the back of that rotation, which isn't unusual in Major League Baseball to have a number five starter who poses some questions. But I think that's the case right now with Manoah, and we'll kind of see how it unfolds in these next couple starts.
Right. What a strange situation for a team to have an iffy number five starter.
Yeah.
You know, how many teams have a lockdown, consistent, really good every time out number five starter?
Like that. Hey, like, they got Aaron Sanchez in Buffalo. He's ready. He's ready.
And this is the thing. It's a complete lack of viable alternatives. What it's Alec Manoah or Paulo Espino or bullpen day. That's where you're at.
Yeah. No, I right? agree.
I mean, Wes Parsons is gone. Mitch White is gone. Bowden Francis is hurt. And when he returns, he's going to be a multi-inning reliever. Like, that experiment did not go well earlier this year. Yariel Rodriguez, I mean, he's hurt. And when he returns, there's a cap on his workload for the rest of the year. So even if he is starting games, it's going to look like it did earlier this year, where it's like 80 pitches, you know.
And Tiedemann's injured.
Right. And Rodriguez was not super pitch efficient as well with, you know, with what he had to work with. Like, that's a guy who also was missing the zone far too often. And yeah, the Tiedemann thing for the second year in a row, Blue Jays really high on Ricky Tiedemann coming out of spring, believe he's going to be part of their big league plans. And he gets hurt early in the season and he's inconsistent when he is on the mound and he just isn't an option for them. So like, this is where the lack of pitching development over the last couple of years really hurts the Blue Jays, because they don't have someone on hand at a AAA who can just step in. Part of that is like trading a Simeon Woods Richardson and trading an Adam Klaufenstein and trading a Sem Roberta, but they don't have somebody from within who can come up and like take like five and dive from them out of the number five spot in their rotation. Like, they just don't have that option right now.
Yeah. Well, other than the rotation, the bullpen and the offense, they're in a pretty good spot. I mean, the defense has been great. The defense, you can't, and it really has. Defense has been really, really good.
I think a lot of people would lump the coaching staff and front office into that as well. I wouldn't,
right.
But I think a lot of folks would.
Well, look, I mean,
and the game ops and the giveaways and the cup holders.
To fully assess the front office would be a full episode. It might be a full mini series, right? Because it's nuanced. You can point to the bad trades, and there have been bad trades. You can point to, you know, no one wants to talk about Teoscar Hernandez or, you know, acquiring Matt Chapman or Jose Barrios or the good trades. That's fine. End of the day, this isn't a good baseball team right now. It has not been a good baseball team this season. So I understand any fan frustration. I'm not here to say that, you know, that this front office has you know, done more good than bad, because the team in front of us right now continues to underperform. But to fully get into the nuance of that would require, you know, a full few hours.
I think I just saw that your boy Jorge Soler went on the IL.
How's he been doing? Now we're late enough in the podcast that we can do a little Jorge Soler check, and people can tune out if they like.
So Jorge Soler has a shoulder strain, and he has hit the IL. I'm kind of combing Trader Reserve. It doesn't seem like there's an idea of how long he's going to be out.
You know, his WAR is negative. It's negative 0.1. We got to step away in a second here. But Jorge Soler, I'm sure that would have solved everything for the Jays, right?
He's hitting 202 with five bombs, Jorge Soler.
But look, I mean, I'm not here to try to dunk on it. I do.
No, you're not? What was that?
Hey, you brought it up. I didn't bring up Jorge Soler.
You mentioned some front office decisions that we don't revisit.
Yes.
So,
yeah. You know,
sometimes it's important to revisit them.
Sure. You can bring up Jorge Soler anytime. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the point is the Jays have not been good enough so far, and it puts them in not a very good position. But we'll see where it unfolds. It doesn't mean they're doomed. We'll see how it unfolds.
Yeah, it hasn't been good so far, but there's no reason why it can't be good going forward. Like, we just don't know enough yet. We've seen 20% of a season. So the first 20%, not good. not good enough. If the next four fifths play out like the first fifth did, that is a massive problem. But we've only seen the first fifth. We'll see what the next four fifths bring.
Yeah. Even if the next, you know, chunk is similar to this chunk, then that would be a problem. But again, we don't know that that's going to be the case. It could be totally different.
The next chunk is what? Minnesota, Baltimore, Tampa Bay. So, the Blue Jays are going to have to beat some good teams in this stretch. Yeah. That's 9 games, like 2-7 over that stretch would be borderline catastrophic.
Yes, it would.
You know? Even though you're going in to play like White Sox, Detroit White Sox after that. Oh, and then Pittsburgh. So there is actually a nice little soft schedule stretch coming up at the end of May. But I don't know, man. Like KC and Washington looked like a decent little soft schedule stretch at one point.
What if you face Paul Skeens and Jared Jones for the Pirates, right? Like that's not going to be fun. What if you face Scooble and Flaherty with the Tigers? Like Tigers are kind of good. So
if you're facing Paul Skeens, call up Nathan Lucas. You know why?
Right.
I was talking to him.
Deep?
No, he had 3 hits off of him, all first pitch singles, all first pitch fastballs, by the way. I think I'm trying to pull up the box score because I think the Bisons had like 4 hits off of Skeens that day. Like Skeens is incredible. Like he's so good. And I think the Bisons had like 4 hits off of him. And Nathan Lucas had 3 of them off of first pitch heaters. Yeah, 4 hits. 3 of them were, Skeens goes 6 shutout against the Bisons, so that was 4 hits, strikes out 7, walks only 1. For 3 of those 4 hits, Nathan Lucas off of first pitch heaters, all of them like 100 miles per hour. So call up Nathan Lucas if you're, I was talking to him about it when on that one strange day, very strange roster move by the Blue Jays, by the way, like sending down Addison Barger and calling up Nathan Lucas for one day when they know Kevin Kiermaier is coming off of the IL. Addison Barger's wife is due very shortly. And, I understand that played a bit of a role in it, but still a very strange roster move. I was talking to him when he was up for that one day and he was like, I just sold out for fastballs and hit them.
Nice. Well, honestly, I would call him up. Why not? Maybe that's the shakeup the Blue Jays need. Many more games before now and the Pirates series. Arden, you and I will be covering a bunch of them. Stay tuned for Arden's work. Keep an eye out for a couple articles that I'm working on as well for sportsnet.ca. But that is going to do it for us this week on At the Letters. Thanks again to Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade for producing At the Letters. And thanks to you for listening. We will talk to you soon.